Okay, here's one very simple question. Beatles or Stones? Chances are you knew your answer before I even finished asking the question. Rivalries have fueled the music industry for decades, and our next guest has a lot to say on the subject. Stephen Hayden has written for Grantland, he's written for Rolling Stone, for Pitchfork, and many other places. His new book out today is called Your Favorite Band Is Killing Me: What Pop Music Rivalries Reveal About the Meaning of Life. We spoke with him by phone. So, Steve, Your Favorite Band Is Killing Me starts with one of my favorite pop rivalries, and one that I just need to mention that we stand squarely on opposite ends of, and that's the rivalry between Blur and Oasis. Can you talk about why you started the book there?
Well, because that's where it begins for me, you know, as far as caring about music rivalries. That was the first rivalry that I really cared about when I was a teenager. And it's kind of funny because, I was growing up in obviously the United States in the mid '90s, and Oasis and Blur, it wasn't really a rivalry here in America. It was more so in England, you know, because in that country those two bands were on the same plane commercially. You know, here in America, Oasis was much more popular than Blur, so. For me to care about it as much as I did at that time, it showed a real commitment, I think, to, you know, wanting to kind of believe in that this conflict had meaning for me, you know, and I invested a lot of myself in it. When you read that chapter, I hope that one thing that comes across is that I'm insane, or at least I was insane when I cared about that as much. Like, you know, I meet a lot of people who say that, you know, I like Oasis and Blur equally, you know, like there's no reason to pit them against each other. But, you know, one of the things I was trying to illustrate in that chapter was that I was insane for being as intense about it as I was. But at the same time, you know, the sort of residual effect of caring so much about that when I was a teenager, it's carried over into adulthood.
And one of the things that chapter does pretty effectively is that, I mean, it sets this book up as, it's less a musical history book, and it's more of an almost sociological text. Can you talk about how you're approaching the phenomena of pop music rivalries?
You know, the thesis of the book is that people use these sorts of dichotomies to work through other issues, you know, in their lives. You know, so a lot of times, like if you're talking about like Blur and Oasis, for instance, you know, a lot of the people that cared about that rivalry, they drew this sort of binary relationship between the bands, where Blur was supposed to be the smart band, you know, the university band, sort of a more affluent band in a lot of ways. Says tomorrow's your lucky day. Well, here's your lucky day. Whereas Oasis was considered this like working class alternative, and their songs were much more straightforward, more anthemic. You could say dumber, I guess, if you're a Blur fan. Today was gonna be the day, but they'll never throw it back to you. By now, you should have somehow realized what you're not to do. That sort of binary relationship that those bands had is the way, I think, for a lot of people who are observing that, to like work out their feelings about class and what rock and roll is supposed to be and what it's supposed to signify. And that's a thread that carries throughout the book. I really do feel that, like, the rivalries that really mattered in music, just like the rivalries that matter in sports or in politics or in any other kind of arena, they tend to signify something bigger than just what the primary players, you know, who they are and what they represent. I said maybe
you're gonna be the one that saves me. Yeah, and I think it would be fair to say that anybody who's going to be picking this book up is probably pretty emotionally invested in at least one of the rivalries that you've written about in the book. So when in the process of putting this book together did you realize that at least one point in the book you were guaranteed to completely alienate or anger at least like 100% of your audience?
Yeah, I mean,
It's funny because coming from the background I do, you know, I'm a music critic and journalist, and I've been working for the most part online, you know, for most of my career. So like, I think I'm already like conditioned to believe that anything I write will anger people. You know, that's sort of the world we live in, no matter what topic you write about. Certainly with a topic like this, however, the likelihood that someone will be offended while reading this book seems pretty high. However, you know, I've been trying to kind of say up front, and I even say this in the book, is that I'm not really interested in picking sides. Like, I'm not interested in saying that artist A is better than artist B. I'm more interested in the dynamics of these relationships between these artists, but it's also the bigger sort of interaction that happens in people's imaginations. Like when Taylor Swift and Kanye West, you know, feud at the MTV Video Music Awards.
Yo, Taylor, I'm really happy for you. I'm gonna let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
You know, there's an actual conflict there. But then there's all the things that we project onto that incident. You know, there's people who will say that that's an example of sexism at award shows. There are people who will say that's an example of racism at award shows. They'll say all sorts of things that they think that this situation means. And I'm fascinated by that. You know, why do we project these things onto pop culture events?
Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought up the Taylor Swift and Kanye, because I mean that might be, I mean, one of the things that I think draws people to the, I mean, to the book overall, is, you know, sort of getting a take on that, you know, in the years since it's happened.
And it's funny too, because, you know, obviously I turned the book in several months ago, and at the time when I turned it in, it seemed as if that rivalry had petered out, you know, because Taylor Swift and Kanye, they had publicly reconciled, and they were talking about even like collaborating on a song and all that. And then, of course, you know, The Life of Pablo, the latest Kanye West record, comes out earlier this year, and there's a song on there that disses Taylor Swift. You know, so it just revives that rivalry. And, you know, and there was a part of me that was like, just you know, chomping at the bit there, because it's like you want to go back into the book and like add this stuff, but you know. On the other hand, it does make that chapter, you know, it does give it more relevance in a way, because now that rivalry, you know, it's been sparked back up again. That was pretty cool. So thank you, Kanye. That was great marketing for my book.
Yeah, well, I mean, one other thing that's interesting about that particular rivalry is, I mean, like with the other, you know, kind of standard ones, you know, the Beatles versus the Stones, Nirvana and Pearl Jam, Blur and Oasis. I mean, these are at least superficially similar rock bands, whereas Kanye West versus Taylor Swift is a little bit different. Can you talk about sort of the dynamic between the two and what they represent culturally?
Well, in the chapter that I wrote about them, you know, one of the things I talk about is how, you know, their careers in a way have been intertwined ever since that incident happened at that was the 2009 MTV Video Music Awards. And for people who don't remember, you know, Taylor Swift won the award, I think it was for Best Female Video. And Kanye West ended up rushing the stage, and you know, because he thought that Beyonce should have won the award. And of course, in the aftermath of that, Kanye West was just slammed in the media. It really hurt his career. It seemed, you know, it's funny because Kanye has been through so many different media, you know, controversies, that he seems sort of indestructible now. Like, it doesn't seem like anything's really going to take him down. He's almost like Donald Trump in that way. Like, he can say anything, and it doesn't really matter. But that Taylor Swift incident, it did seem like something that could have destroyed his career. You know, because you even had, like, Barack Obama was talking about it. And, you know, he made some comment to, like, a reporter off the record that, like, Kanye was a jerk or something for doing this. So that's how big of a deal it was. Of course, in the aftermath of that for Taylor Swift, it in a way was the first thing that helped her cross over into being like a major pop star. Because, you know, shortly after that, she won the Grammy for Album of the Year. I think that was for Fearless. I think that was like her first Album of the Year award. And she has just become a bigger star in the aftermath of that. So it kind of set up this sort of classic contrast between the establishment pop star, which is Taylor Swift, and sort of like the outlaw guy who you know, the irreverent sort of subversive guy, which is Kanye West. You know, and that's a dynamic that's as old as popular music. I mean, we've been talking about that for decades.
Yeah, it seems like something that we kind of require in the realm of popular culture.
Yeah, and you said something before too about how a lot of the rivalries are between artists that are similar in a lot of ways. And I think that's an important observation to make. I mean, I think part of what makes rivalries interesting for people is pitting two artists or bands that they feel like occupy a similar space, but are also different in some crucial way, you know, and that goes back to, you know, Beatles and Stones. You know, they're basically two rock bands. But the difference is that the Stones don't wear suits, you know? The Beatles wore suits, and the Stones wore, like, sloppy clothes, and they had, like, longer, greasier hair. And it was, like, that was the crucial difference, like, the good guys versus the bad guys.
All right, well, Steve Hyden, he's been a writer for the AV Club, for the Rolling Stone, for Salon, and many other places. The book is called Your Favorite Band is Killing Me. Steve, thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.